ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय। So today we are reading Srimad Bhagavatam 10 to 10, chapter 87, text number 24. Kaiha Nuveda Bhatavara Janma Layo Agrasaram. Yata udaga drishiryam anudeva gana ubhaye. Tarhi nasanna cha sadubhayam nacha kala java. Kim api natatra shastram avakrishya shayitayadam. Kaiha nuveda bhatavara janmalayo agrasaram. Yata udaga drishiryam anudeva gana ubhaye. Tarhi nasanna cha sadubhayam nacha kala javam. Kim api na tatra shastram avakrishya shayitayadam. Kaiha nuveda bhatavara janmalayo agrasaram. Yata udaga drishiryam anudeva gana ubhaye. Tarhi nasanna cha sadubhayam nacha kala javam. Kim api na tatra shastram avakrishya shayita yadam.
Kaiha nuveda
Ladies, so we're going to read the translation and purport. Everyone in this world has recently been born and will soon die. So how can anyone here know him who existed prior to everything else and who gave rise to the first learned sage Brahma and all subsequent demigods, both lesser and greater? When he lies down and withdraws everything within himself, nothing else remains. No gross or subtle matter or bodies composed of those. No force of time or revealed scripture. Purport. Here the Shrutis express the difficulty of knowing the Supreme. Devotional service or bhakti yoga, as described in these prayers of the personified Vedas, is the surest and easiest path to knowledge of the Lord and to liberation. In comparison, the philosophic search for knowledge, known as Jnana Yoga, is very difficult, favored though it is by those who are disgusted with material life, but still unwilling to surrender to the Lord. As long as the finite soul remains envious of the Lord's supremacy, the Lord does not reveal himself, as he states in Bhagavad Gita 9:25. I believe it's 7:25. I was actually looking this other night. Naham prakasha sarvasya yoga maya samavrita murdoyam nabijananti lokomam majamavyayam. I am never manifest to the foolish and unintelligent. For them I am covered by my eternal potency, and therefore they do not know that I am unborn and infallible. And in the words of Lord Brahma, Pantastu koti shatavatsara sampragamyam vayurato pimanaso munipungavanam seo apiyasa samyachintyatatve Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship Govinda, the primal Lord, only the tip of the toe of whose lotus feet is approached by the yogis who aspire after the transcendental and betake themselves to pranayam by drilling the respiration, or by the jnanis who search out the undifferentiated Brahman by the process of elimination of the mundane extending over thousands of millions of years. Brahma Samhita 5:34. Brahma, the firstborn living being in this universe, is also the foremost sage. He is born from Lord Narayan, and from him appear the hosts of demigods, including both the controllers of earthly activities and the rulers of heaven. All those powerful and intelligent beings are relatively recent productions of Lord's creative energy. As the first speaker of the Vedas, Lord Brahma should know their purport at least as well as any other authority, But even he knows the personality of God is only to a limited extent. As Srimad Bhagavatam states, Veda Guyam Krit Patem, the Lord of the heart hides himself deep within the confidential recesses of the Vedic sound. If Brahma and the demigods born from him cannot easily know the Supreme Lord, how then can mortals expect success in their independent pursuit of knowledge? As long as the creation lasts, living beings face many obstacles on the path of knowledge. Because of identifying themselves with their material coverings, consisting of body, mind, and ego, they acquire all sorts of prejudice and misconceptions. Even if they have the divine scripture to guide them and the opportunity to execute the prescribed methods of karma, jnana, and yoga, the conditioned souls have but little power for gaining knowledge of the Absolute. And when the time of annihilation comes, the Vedic scriptures and their regulative injunctions become unmanifest, leaving the dormant jivas completely in darkness. Therefore, we should abandon all futile endeavors for knowledge without devotion and simply surrender ourselves to the Supreme Lord's mercy, heeding the advice of Lord Brahma. Jnane prayasamudapasya namanta eva jivanti samukharitam bhavajayam stane stita shutinatam tanuvani mahi yatrayashavita. Those who, even while remaining situated in their established social positions, throw away the processes of speculative knowledge and with their body, words, and mind offer all respects to the descriptions of your personality and activities, dedicating their lives to those narrations which are vibrated by you personally and by your pure devotees, certainly conquer your lordship. Although you are otherwise unconquerable by anyone within the three worlds. In this regard, the Taittiriya Upanishad refers to the Supreme as Yato Vacho Nivartante Aprapya Manasa Saha, where words cease and where the mind cannot reach. The Upanishad states, Anejad Akim Manaso Jiva Naita Devat Manjish Tada Vato Nayanate Kitishtat Rasmi Napo Matarishvat Nadati. Although fixed in his abode, the personality of Godhead is more swift than the mind and can overcome all others running. The powerful demigods cannot approach him, although in one place he controls those who supply the air and rain, and he suppresses all in excellence. And in the Rig Veda we find this mantra, Kodida Veda Kaiha Pravachat Kuta ayayata kuta iyam shrishti arvi eva visarje hako vidayata. Who in this world actually knows and who can explain whence this creation has come? The demigods, after all, are younger than the creation. Who then can tell whence this world has come into being? Srila Sridhar Swami thus prays, Kvaham badi adi samritunam kvacha buman mahastavam dinam bando dayasindhu akti menre yisham. What am I, a being entrapped by the material coverings of worldly intelligence and so on? And what are your glories by comparison, O Almighty One? O friend of the fallen, O ocean of mercy, Lord Nirhari, please bless me with your devotional service. Kaiha nuveda batavara janmalayo grisasaram yatauda gadrishriyam manudeva guna vayem tarhi nasanna chasadubayam nachakala javam Kimapi natatra shastram avikrishya shayita yadam. Om agyana timarandasya gananjana shalakaya chakshur maitam yena tasmai shi gurave namaha. Jai Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Sri Advaita Gadadhara Shivasvani Bhura Bhakta Vrinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. Vanshakalpa Tirubhishya Kripasina Bevacha Patitanam Pavanangyo Vaishnavebhyo Namo Namaham. So in this verse we have a lot of information, a lot of many very important and deep points. Before we dive into the verse, I just wanted to briefly recap where we are in this chapter. And as we know, all this discussion in this chapter started by a simple question of Maharaj Parikshit, where he was inquiring from Shukadeva Goswami. He said, "O Brahmana, how can the Vedas directly describe the supreme absolute truth, who cannot be described in words?" And then Shukadeva Goswami, he could of course give an immediate answer, but instead he referred to previous authorities, thus giving us basically example how we should always quote the authorities, even though we may know the answer ourselves. Basically, that is the proper way of presenting the Vedic knowledge. So Shukadeva Goswami went on explaining, well, the same question was once asked by Narada. He once approached Shri Narayana Rishi and he inquired about the same topics. And then in that discussion, basically, it is described that Shri Narayan Rishi narrated then the story of great sages performing the sacrifice on the planet of Janalok. And it is described all of them were very, very elevated personalities. It is described that the sacrifice they were performing is called Satram. And the reason it's called Satram because all of them are equally qualified, meaning any of them could be the priest in charge of the ceremony. So all of them were very pure, elevated sages. So they decided to select one of them to speak, and that was Shri Sanandana, one of the four Kumaras. And then he went on to describe and reply to their inquiry. So as we can see, there is several discussions going on parallel, so it's important to kind of know, you know, where we are in all that description. So Shri Sanandana replied, "After the Supreme Lord withdrew the universe he had previously created, he lay for some time and as if asleep, and all his energies rested dormant within him. When the time came for the next creation, the personified Vedas awakened him by chanting his glories, just as the poet awakens the king by reciting his heroic deeds." So that's how it all started. So the personified Vedas, they are offering prayers and glorifying the Lord. And this particular verse, the personified Vedas are saying, "Everyone in this world has recently been born and will soon die. So how can anyone here know him who has existed prior to creation and will exist after the creation?" So the point being, all of us live for a very, very short period of time. And in this purport, it is described that even in the lives of demigods who live for much, much longer time periods, the limitation to acquire and fully understand the Lord is very limited. So in the purport, basically, it is describing what is the use of, you know, even trying to philosophically understand the Lord. It is impossible. So the in the commentary we are finding the surest path, it says, Bhakti Yoga is the surest and easiest path. Jnana Yoga is very difficult, but it is favored by those who are disgusted with material life but still are willing to surrender. So the personified Vedas, they also were chanting one of the prayers, and they said, but some rare fortunate souls, they have gotten relief from fatigue of material life by diving into the vast nectar ocean of your pastimes. So all of us are, you know, in one sense, those fortunate souls. By the mercy of Srila Prabhupada and his followers, we have given the opportunity to dive deep into the ocean of the Lord's pastimes. So it is great and rare opportunity, as we can see. So the purport also mentions what is the reason that majority of souls don't do that. And basically, it is saying that unfortunately, due to the envy, which is the initial cause of fall down for the jiva, many living entities, they are not willing to approach the Lord and inquire about him. So there's many examples in which the living entities changed their heart and became favorable to the Lord. And one particular example is, as we all know, is the story about Shishupal. So what happened one day, as Lord was performing his daily activities, he went to the assembly house, Sudharma, to consult with his ministers. And as they were discussing, all of a sudden, there was a messenger knocking on the door. So they let him in, and he offered his prayers and obeisances. And then he presented his case to the Lord. And he said that he's coming with a message of many, many royal princes and kings who were arrested by the great demon Jarasandha. And Jarasandha was known for causing the troubles even from much before. He attacked Lord Krishna many, many times and he could never defeat him. But he was just a stubborn and demoniac fellow that he just kept trying and trying, and at one point Lord just ignored him and went to Dwarka. So that king Jarasandha, he was basically going around, and whoever was not willing to surrender to him, he would arrest them. So it is described in Krishna book, he was actually holding captive like 20,000 kings and princes. They were in captivity somewhere deep in a mountain. So all of them, they sent a message begging for the Lord's mercy to save them, because Jarasandha was so powerful. He described he had the power of 10,000 elephants. Nobody could defeat him. So the Lord, he heard the message, and as he was thinking what to do, Narada Muni appears. And as we know, Narada Muni, he knows exactly, you know, when to show up, and he always brings more sweetness to the Lord's pastimes. So Narada Muni said, my Lord, King Yudhishthir is getting ready to perform a Rajasuya sacrifice, and he would like your presence to be there. You know, he primarily wants your association, and he wants to basically declare clearly to everyone that you are the supreme. So Krishna was now, you know, in dilemma. You know, on one side he has duty to rescue the surrendered souls who are looking for his shelter, and on the other side he was invited to the sacrifice. So he asked Uddhava. He said, "My dear Uddhava, you are my most confidential friend and well-wisher. Please advise me, what should I do in this situation?" And Uddhava, he understands Lord Krishna. He knows the future, he knows the past, he knows exactly what to do, but out of his causeless mercy, he is giving him chance to do service. So Lord Uddhava humbly replied, "My dear Lord, the best thing to do would be actually to accomplish the two goals simultaneously." So he suggested, "You should go to the Hastinapur where the Pandavas are, and rather than engaging large army, you know, where many peoples could, you know, get killed, I suggest that you alone with Bhima and Arjun go alone to Jarasandha. And in addition to that, I suggest that you dress as a Brahmins, not as a Kshatriyas, because Jarasandha was known for his very charitable character, and he was very respectful to the Brahmanas. Even though he was demoniac, he had a great respect for the Brahmins. So Uddhava said, "If you beg for charity, he will be willing and agreeable to anything you request." So that's what happened. On one side, Yudhishthira was willing to do the performance, but the condition to actually do that would be to declare the rulership over all the kings and to collect the appropriate taxes. So the obstacle to achieve that was mainly Jarasandha. Pandavas, they defeated all other kings, but Jarasandha was the only one unwilling to surrender. So after, you know, everything was arranged, Lord Krishna, Bhima, and Arjun, they dressed as Brahmins, and they went to the kingdom of Jarasandha. And when he saw them, he realized, these three, they look a little bit strange. You know, they're dressed as Brahmins, but in the meantime, you know, they're, you know, like, you know, have large bodies, you know, very muscular. So he realized, actually, they are, you know, hiding something. But even Jarasandha, he remembered the story how Bali Maharaj was cheated by Lord Vamanadev. So he thought, anyhow, you know, they have come as a Brahmins, you know, at least, you know, if nothing, you know, I will gain the glory by surrendering and great reputation. So Jarasandha said, "My dear Brahmanas, please ask anything in charity. I'm willing to give anything you ask. Even if you ask for my life, I'm willing to give." And then Krishna spoke and he said, "My dear Jarasandha, we are actually not Brahmins, but instead we have come here to challenge you to fight." And he said, "You know, this is, you know, Pandu's two sons, Bhima and Arjun, and I'm your, you know, old enemy, Krishna." So Jarasandha, he became like, you know, totally angry, and you know, he said, yeah, you know, definitely, I'm going to fight you immediately. You know, no need to wait. I will give you that boon immediately. And he said, "Arjun is too young. You know, I'm not going to fight him. He is inferior to me." And you, Krishna, you are a coward. You run away from me. I'm not going to deal with you either. But Bhim, he's strong. I think he's the right opponent. I think, you know, we are right match. So they took the huge clubs and they went to the courtyard and they started beating each other furiously. And it's explained like as they were, you know, hitting so hard with the clubs, like the sound produced was like thunder because they were so powerful. But neither one could really overcome the other. So the fighting kept going on day after day. It is described actually they were fighting like 27 days. And neither one could really overcome each other. They were equally strong. So they would be fighting during the day, and in the evening they would be just like friends, you know, like guests at Jarasandha's palace. So at one point, Bhima, he confidentially expressed himself to the Lord. He said, "My Lord, I don't think I can defeat this demon. He's equally strong as I am. What to do?" So Krishna, he then disclosed a very confidential secret about Jarasandha's birth. And he described that previously, the way Jarasandha was born, he was actually born in two parts. And when his father saw that baby was useless, he actually threw him away. And then the witch Jara actually found the parts of the body and I guess somehow by her black magic put the child together. So Lord Krishna, he took a little twig and he kind of tore it apart, kind of giving a hint to Bhima saying, this is how you can defeat him. And Prabhupada explains, this is the example telling us that if Lord Krishna wants to kill someone, nobody can save him. Even if somebody is powerful as Jarasandha, still, you know, there was no hope for him at that point. So next day, surely Bhima, you know, taking the advice of Lord, he easily, you know, defeated him, following Lord's advice. And so Jarasandha was finally killed. Bhima, Arjuna, and Lord Krishna, they returned back to Hastinapur. And Yudhishthira was so happy to see them back. It is described that the tears were coming out of, you know, pouring out of his eyes as he was listening to the Lord's activities and how they defeated Jarasandha. So everything was ready for that sacrifice. All the great sages were invited, all the royal families, all the Kurus were present, all sons of Dhritarashtra, and elderly members of family like Bhishma, Dronacharya, even the great demigods were present, like Lord Brahma, Lord Shiva, and Indra. So it was a great assembly. So everything was going very smoothly. And at one point, Sahadev, he got up and he was offering prayers and praising the Lord in very sweet, melodious voice and offering beautiful prayers. So as Sahadev was explaining, in this great assembly, we have so many wonderful personalities. But I declare we should all offer first worship to Krishna. Because he is the greatest of all of us. He possesses all six opulences. From him, all the demigods are coming and all the living entities. So we should definitely worship Lord Krishna and offer him first worship. So as he was praying in that way, you know, all the demigods and great sages were cheerfully agreeing with him. And but there was a few people in the assembly who were not in agreement, and specifically Shishupal. as he was listening, he was like, you know, getting more and more uncomfortable as Sahadeva was praising the Lord because of the envy. And that is the example I'm trying to come to. Shishupal, he was envious, first of all, you know, a long time ago, he was supposed to marry Rukmini. And, you know, Krishna just stole her right out of, you know, midst of all the assembled kings. So from that day, he was, you know, cultivating great envy towards the Lord. And as Sahadeva was praying and, you know, praising the Lord, Shishupal was just like almost boiling like a pressure cooker, you know, just waiting to explode. So Yudhishthira, he bathed Lord's lotus feet and everything was going smoothly. And but then all of a sudden Shishupal just exploded. He couldn't control himself. And he started blaspheming the Lord in the great assembly. And he was saying, how is it possible that, you know, we are all, you know, agreeing to follow the advice of this young boy, Sahadeva. He called him young boy. You know, we shouldn't follow blindly, you know. Krishna, nobody knows even from what caste he comes, you know. He's born in like Vaishya family and now he's king. Like nobody knows, like, you know, what's his background. The way he was criticizing Lord Prabhupada explains, like indirectly, he was actually praising him. Shishupal was saying, like, nobody knows even what Krishna's activities are. Like, he has no duties in this whole life, which in fact Lord Krishna doesn't. He just performs his activities to set the example for us. So as Shishupal was going on with his blasphemy, all the Kshatriyas, they, you know, they were ready to jump and, you know, basically kill him right there. But Krishna was just kind of holding them in check. And because he didn't want to spoil the sacrifice by, you know, turning all the, you know, beautiful arrangements into like a battlefield almost. So Shishupal just kept going and going and going. And finally, the Lord decided to just end his life and cut his head with Sudarshan Chakra. So we can see from that example how envy is such a great obstacle, because it covers the intelligence of the living entity and prevents us from first of all understanding the position of the Lord and position of the conditioned soul. And furthermore, it prevents the conditioned soul from taking the shelter, because if we believe, you know, we are on the same level, then absolutely there is no even chance of surrender or what to speak about loving emotions toward the Lord. So this is one example I wanted to narrate. And as we can see here in the purport, it is explained, Bhakti Yoga is the surest and easiest path. But following the Bhakti Yoga does require a great deal of discipline. And following the proper guidelines presented by the previous authorities, by Srila Prabhupada. So even though, you know, we may be chanting and doing our sadhana, it is essential to do it with a full heart and full mind, and at the same time follow all the rules and regulations. Srila Prabhupada once gave a very nice example. There was one of the leaders in our society who had very, very significant duties, but he at some point was a little bit deviant from the rules and regulations. So one time, devotees brought him to Srila Prabhupada, and Prabhupada gave a very nice story that was very instructive. So he said to that devotee, because the devotee was still believing, even though he wasn't following the rules properly, he thought that he is still qualified to be in charge. So Srila Prabhupada told him, he actually narrated the story. He said, there was one time yogi that came into the town and he challenged everybody in town saying that he's able to stay all night long in the cold river, you know, and it was, I'm assuming, winter time, without any heat, without any other arrangements, just standing there all night long. So all the people are, you know, amazed, like, wow, like, you know, this yogi is really powerful. So when one of the servants of the rich man in the town heard that, he went to his master and he said, that yogi is challenging everybody in town. And he's saying, like, you know, he can stand all night in the river without any heat. And the rich man said, no way, that's just, you know, ridiculous. Like, nobody can do that. He's going to be dead by, you know, before the sunrise. And the servant was saying, no, he's a really powerful yogi. So they went to see the yogi, and the rich man, he said, I accept the challenge. If you stay all night in the river, next morning I will give you 10 gold coins. I guess there was no currency, which no government was printing the money like nowadays. So 10 gold coins will be your reward. Just, you know, if you can stay till morning. So next morning, all the town people assembled to see what's happening, and the yogi was still there. Yeah, he was, you know, deep in meditation and just as he promised. So the rich man, he rushed to the place to see what's going on. And as he came closer, he realized he lost the challenge. But one of the his ministers said, hey, wait a second. I see the lamp in the distance, and the yogi was taking the heat from that lamp. He cheated. Don't pay him anything. And the rich man says, yeah, you are a cheater. I know what you did. You, by your yogi powers, you took the heat from the lamp, you know, which was, you know, maybe mine away. And everybody realized that, you know, the rich man is just trying to get his way out of his promise. So anyhow, all the people went to their homes, and the rich man went to his palace. And but the servant who initially brought the news to that rich man, he was very, very displeased, because he knew that the yogi was cheated. It wasn't honest at all. So next morning, the rich man, he requested the servant, go and, you know, prepare me the meal. And he said, yeah, sure, master, I will do what you ask. And he went to the kitchen, and as he was waiting, basically, you know, the time was passing, and the rich guy was, I don't know if he had a clock, but it was really getting late. So he was wondering, what's going on? And the servant said, oh, it's just coming, don't worry. And the hours were passing, and, you know, 1 hour after the other, and, you know, the poor guy was getting hungry. So he rushed into the kitchen and said, what are you doing? I've been waiting for hours. Where is my meal? And he realized what was happening. The servant, he had a pot. He had actually a flame on the ground, like a normal. But the pot was really, really high, hanging on the ceiling, very far from the fire. So, the meal wasn't even warm up yet. It was just such a great distance. So he became so angry. He said, what are you doing? You're wasting my time and I'm starving. And the servant said, well, I'm cooking. If the yogi can, you know, take the heat from the candle that was like a mile away, then, you know, I can prepare the meal this way too. So the rich man, he realized that he was actually very dishonest, and at that point he agreed to pay his promise to the yogi. So when the devotees heard the story, they were kind of puzzled. They were really not sure where Prabhupada is going. And Prabhupada had many of these stories that had really subtle meaning. So when Prabhupada realized devotees were a little bit, you know, unclear with understanding of the story, he explained further. He said, you can have a fire and you can have a pot, But unless you follow the prescribed method of cooking and preparing the prasadam, you're not going to get the, you know, the desired result. So similarly, unless we follow the prescribed rules and regulations that are given to us by the previous acharyas, we're not going to reach that final desired result. So Prabhupada, by giving that example, he taught his disciple how essential it is to follow all the rules strictly. So I'm getting a little bit out of time here. The last thing I just want to mention, I was also comparing this same chapter in Krishna book where Prabhupada elaborately explains the prayers by the personified Vedas. And Srila Prabhupada explains in Krishna book, out of all the great qualities that personified Vedas actually presented through their prayers, Prabhupada said that the most important one is his causeless mercy upon the conditioned souls in reclaiming them from the clutches of Maya. So I thought that is really, really essential part to understand that by the Lord's mercy, we really, that is all our only hope, and by the mercy of his devotees, that you know, we can even try to understand and relish his pastimes. So thank you so much. I will stop here. I know there is so much more to be told. These are wonderful verses. I encourage you all to also read the same chapter in Krishna book. I was actually reading recently, and I noticed actually that particular chapter is much, much bigger than any other chapter. I actually calculated 104 pages. Biggest chapter, that's what I thought. I didn't compare each chapter, but I noticed most of the chapters in Krishna book are usually about 30 pages. But that particular one is like 104 pages. So it is really important, very important information. So thank you so much. If there's any questions, critics, or comments, we can say a few more words. Yes.
I'm still confused about the yogi in the water, mm-hmm. because it sounds like he actually did spend the night and then he wasn't bogus. But the story sounds, the explanation with the fire in the pot sounds like he was.
Yeah, but out of envy, as he said, oh, he could not stay by himself from the fire from there. I know that example is mixing two things. Yeah. You got it. What's the problem? Envious.
Yeah, the yogi, basically, you know, he of course had his motivation to impress the people. He wasn't really, you know, pure bhakti yogi. But the main point Prabhupada was trying to make is basically that it was actually more important what servant did later on while he was preparing the meal, you know, by trying to, you know, teach the rich man that, you know, you really, you know, the yogi was keeping his promise, but you didn't keep your promise. So the way he did it, basically, you know, basically putting the pot away from the fire is just to signify that, you know, what the rich man thought about yogi wasn't really truth, that he actually did remain in the water without any heat or any other arrangements. Okay, Prabhu. Okay, thank you so much. Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jaya.